Welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Primary care doctors today feel like they're on a hamster wheel, having to move faster just to stay in place. Under what's called the fee-for-service model of insurance payments, doctors are only able to bill you or your insurance for an office visit, not time spent coordinating your care, talking to you on the phone, or even, does your doctor do it, electronic mail. On top of that, new government requirements on reporting quality data and upgrading to electronic medical records mean that costs of running a practice go up, but revenues aren't able to keep up. Some doctors have decided they've had enough. Enough of the system, enough of Medicare, enough of having to haggle with other insurance companies. One of them, my guest today, Dr. Rob Lamberts, recently left the group practice that he co-founded in 1994 to go solo, bucking a trend toward consolidation, starting what he calls a direct practice in which patients pay him a monthly fee to keep them well rather than having insurance pay for their visits when they're sick. Lamberts has been a highly regarded humorist and medical blogger since 2006 when he started putting his thoughts out in cyberspace. His blog is called More Musings of a Distractible Kind, and it's regularly updated and reposted on bigger health websites across the country. Dr. Rob Lamberts is my guest today over the phone from his home in Augusta, Georgia. Dr. Rob Lamberts, welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health.
Well, thank you.
I want to start by asking you, what do you mean by direct practice? How do you define it?
A lot of folks actually call this kind of practice a concierge type of practice. Concierge practice, though, has a connotation of a high-cost, high-end type of care for rich people and such. So even though the concept of having a monthly payment and not dealing with insurance is pretty much in line with the concierge practice, the direct care is lower cost, and it's really aimed towards the average person rather than toward people who have extra money, who want extra special care, who want to ride first class or whatever, which, of course, in my opinion, is not first class anyway. But that's another issue. The idea is that it's a lower monthly fee, but it's direct because it's really getting rid of all the other folks who stand between me and my patient. You know, the transaction of health care in my old practice was that my patients paid the insurance company or they paid the government, and those folks sent the money to me, but then I had to write my notes so that I pleased the government, and I had to do all these X, Y, and Z rules, and I couldn't do referrals and all the other types of things because the insurance company said, you know, since they controlled the money. Direct care is just me and my patient. It's care that I give directly to my patient without anybody standing in between. The idea is that it's direct. It's no intervening party.
So I have health insurance, and I want you to be my doctor, but you don't take insurance. Is that right?
Right.
Okay, but so I have to sign up, as it were, and pay the monthly fee. And you distinguish between concierge practice and direct practice, direct being the more affordable type. So what do you charge a patient per month, or on what basis?
Well, you know, when I was first trying to decide what I would charge, and honestly, it was a lot of guesswork to some extent, but the number that kept coming back to was $50 a month, $50 a month per person, with a cap for families. And I have, as I was thinking about it, I thought, you know, that would probably work for somebody in my situation, somebody in their 50s. But, you know, what if somebody is younger and they're healthier and they have less medical problems? What about children who are 10 years old, or college students away at college, or the, you know, young families? How can they afford to do it? And so that I actually decided to do a graded charge. The lowest cost are actually people between age 3 and 30, and they're charged $30 a month. That's a dollar a day. Infants, I charge $40 a month between, you know, up to age 3, and then it goes to $40 below age 50, and then above age 65, it goes up to $60. So it's a range, but it's between $30 and $60 a month.
So one thing I like about that is it's very transparent. I mean, you have a certain age, you pay a certain price. Now, I'm wondering, if for the infants, for example, who are paying, you said, I think $40 a month and require lots of vaccinations, are the vaccines, is that an add-on that parents have to pay out of pocket for that, or is that included in the monthly fee?
It's not included in the monthly fee. There's no, you know, for to do a monthly fee that included immunizations, I'd have to charge about $150 a month, and that just wouldn't be practical. Plus, The health department can give immunizations to most children for either free or very low cost. And so it's really not that big of a hassle when it comes to them getting immunizations outside. I really would like to work it out at some point in time to be able to do immunizations, but at this point in time it was something that I didn't want to have to tackle. There are ways to do it, but you'd have to form a separate corporation, and it's all complicated, and I don't really want to do that. I want to keep it as simple as possible.
All right, same question, other side of the coin. So an adult who, say, is a pretty healthy person but maybe takes one cholesterol medicine, and they need to get their labs tested, so that their fee doesn't cover that, but they're going to go to a lab that maybe you have a relationship with? Or?
Well, I actually included some routine tests, cholesterol checks, some of the diabetic tests, if you get a strep throat test, those types of things, urinalysis, those are already covered in the monthly fee, and up to four times a year to do a cholesterol test. I want it to have a certain amount of value to it. And if the person doesn't have insurance, and there are some tests like a CBC or a thyroid test, which I'm not going to cover every test out there, so I have only the set number of routine screening type tests for people's health, but the tests in terms of like looking for specific problems like anemia or thyroid disease, those tests I've actually negotiated a very low, basically a wholesale cash price. For a CBC, it's $4.50. For a thyroid test, it's $8. And a TSH. And the patient has two choices. One is if they don't have insurance, they just pay me for that, and I pay the bill to the lab. And the other option is if they do have insurance, we can send their insurance card with the lab test that we've drawn, and that covers just as it would normally at our old office. So the insurance can still cover.
So insurance can still work for some of the add-ons for people that are lucky enough to have insurance but choose to use your service because it's so user-friendly. But is that true also for Medicare, or is that not true in the Medicare situation?
It is true for Medicare. There is some talk, scary talk for doctors like me, of making it so that you have to be in Medicare to even be able to order tests. But at this point in time, my Medicare patient, my Medicaid patients, and I do have a fair number of both, actually, those folks get their tests paid for, their medications covered by their prescription plans and all the rest.
So you started this practice early in 2013, correct?
Right.
How is it going so far?
It's going real well. It's actually going better than I expected in some ways. I worked for 18 years as a primary care physician. I do adult and pediatric medicine, do the whole family. And in September, I ended up kind of having a falling out with my partners. A lot of it had to do with the desire to continue to focus on patient care and continue to focus on innovating so that we could offer good patient care. And I was in the minority, even though I was a senior partner. And so we had a falling out. It was as cordial of a divorce as a divorce can be. But I ended up working between the end of September and the beginning of February to build this new practice, to have the office set up and to get all that stuff ready on February 5th. I ended up actually not having my office quite ready, and that was when my first patients were scheduled to start, people from my old practice who were transferring over to the new practice. And so we just decided, heck, let's go over to their house and see them. So we did house calls on the first two visits that we did, because there was nothing saying that we couldn't, and I didn't have to worry about how we charge for it, because it's just part of the regular fee. Yes, I've been working since the beginning of February, and have built up to for about 300 patients. My old practice, to put that in perspective, was over 3,000 patients. And the goal of my practice is to get this one near about 1,000 patients, would be about how much I'm wanting to see.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. My guest today, Dr. Rob Lamberts, who is an internist and pediatrician practicing in Georgia, who has started a direct practice care model. He's also an avid blogger And you mentioned the amicable divorce with your old partners. And if you were the senior partner, but you were the one, because you wanted to innovate, probably felt it was better to go out on your own instead of saying, well, I started here and you guys find another way to go, or?
Yeah, you know, when your partners, you know, it was essentially, it's a democracy in that circumstance. And if it was 3-1, it doesn't matter if I said go elsewhere. I really didn't have the legal power to say that. And I could have resisted, but it was obvious that I needed to find something else to do. And overall, I'm very grateful because this has been so much better and so much more, it's got so much more potential to actually make a big difference than anything that I could be doing in the old practice.
How do inquiries come to you now? I mean, they just, people find you online or just call you and say, hey, I'd like to sign up. And is there any entrance requirement, or just, you know, my greenbacks are as good as yours?
Well, there is no requirement as far as, you know, people would say that, well, you're just going to pick and choose the healthy folks. Well, if I had that ability, that would be fine. But the reality is that I can't pick and choose, and I don't pick and choose. All people do is they either find out about me through friends or through, you know, a lot of them are still, my new patients are still folks from the old practice who finally decided they had been fed up with the old system and heard that my practice was going well. And so they've been coming over. But, you know, we've been featured on a local television station, and so I got a lot of inquiries there as well. People just sign up on the web, and we make an appointment and bring them in. We do have a first visit registration fee that I charge, just because it's a lot more work to do that. But in reality, I could probably grow my practice as quickly as I wanted to. I've actually tried to keep things low, keep things quiet, because I am really trying to build. I don't want to get overwhelmed by the number of patients that I have, because I'm trying to do things very, very differently in the type of care that I'm offering. And it's really not just how medicine is being paid for that's different. It's actually how I'm practicing medicine, and that's really the biggest difference, and that's being enabled by how things are being paid. So it's such a deep transformation of healthcare in my situation that I'm trying to make sure that I build this properly, that what I build as far as the system and how it works is something that will be able to grow and that will be able to get up to 1,000 patients or maybe more if I add other services.
All right, so let's focus on the negative first. What's wrong with the current mainstream system or the system that you left? What's broken, and why the patients that are leaving your old practice to come to you, what is it that they're fed up with? And tell our listeners what you were fed up with.
The biggest problem with the healthcare system is that it is not a healthcare system. It's a sick care system. It doesn't profit off of people being healthy. It profits off of people being sick and having problems and using medications and requiring things to be done. People have problem lists. People have that if you come in and don't have any problems and just want to prevent it, in the past, as a doctor, I would not be able to bill for that. And that was always this quandary. What do? They don't have any problems. And the insurance company would require you to list some problem. Well, any system that requires that you be broken for them to get paid, well, they'll benefit off of people being sick, people being broken. And so, essentially, the goal of the healthcare system is not healthy patients. It's managing sickness. And the other thing is that healthcare is largely doctor-centered. It's centered in the doctor's office. And if people say, you ask them, what is healthcare? What do you consider healthcare? Well, people say, well, you know, visiting the doctor and doing a physical exam on the patient and, you know, the lab tests and the other x-rays or medications. Those are all the things that people would consider to be healthcare. But the reality is those things are the offshoot of something more basic in healthcare, and that is communication. And the payment system holds that communication hostage to the exam room because that's the only way that it ever gets paid for. And so my patient has a simple question to keep them healthy. They generally could not in the past just call me and ask me questions and I could help them, they would have to come in and make an appointment. And they'd have to have a problem to be able to do that. And people don't do that. They don't want to wait in the doctor's office forever. And plus, the only way that I would make enough money to stay afloat was to be very busy. And to be so full of patients that, you know, if you 30 patients a day, then I don't have really time to listen to people's small problems. I only have time to put out the big fires. And so it's a system, the old system for me, the system that most docs live in, is a system that is centered around doctors and centered around disease and really very lean on communication, very lean on trying to keep people well and keep people away from doctors. And in reality, that's not what people want. I mean, I don't want to go to the auto mechanic more, and I don't want to go to the dentist more, but I want to go to the dentist some to prevent. I want to interact with those types of things or keep my car well so that I don't ever have to use the high-cost things to fix my car. And the same thing is true with people. The ideal for a person would be that they would spend as little time thinking about healthcare as possible. And yet we have a system that encourages people to only work on their health care, only talk to doctors when they're sick, rather than staying well. I mean, that's really that's the reason that health care costs are driven up, is because we're paying for things to be done and problems to be fixed rather than to preventing them from happening in the first place. You don't get paid for problems that don't happen, and yet that's really what we want.
So in your direct practice model, then, if the patient has a question, they call you, they have your cell phone, perhaps, they email you, or they text you, or?
Yeah, we use whatever communication tool is possible. I have a little card that I hand out that says, on the front, it just says, my doctor answers the phone. And on the back, it says, does yours? You should expect more from your doctor. The idea is that if people call up, I answer the phone and answer their questions and help them deal with problems, or we have some communication tools that we use that allow people to, you know, I have one person who, she injured her finger and her husband's a dentist, and so she x-rayed her finger and I got sent a message with a picture of the x-ray, a JPEG file of the x-ray with a broken finger. And then so we managed it over messaging, and she didn't have to come in for that care. There was no reason to do that. And I actually sent it on to my nurse, who ordered a splint because we hadn't had this problem yet. And so she, even when the splints came in, she came by and we put it on her. And so we can handle problems whatever way. I mean, it's all about communication. Coming to the office is just one form of communication. But the cool thing for this practice for me is that it's actually best for me to have an empty office. It's best for me to have healthy patients and people who are satisfied and not thinking about their health care. And if they need to, then let's treat problems when they're small rather than allowing them to grow large. Keeping somebody out of the emergency room, answering their phone call about those problems. There's so many ways that I can handle problems early and help folks before they become big problems.
It really seems to turn the current model almost upside down, as you point out. I mean, having an empty waiting room being a sign of virtue would be a sign of doom in the regular office practice model. And what I'm wondering is, if you theoretically have this, you know, very not-so-filled waiting room and you have extra time because you're keeping people healthy, are there value addeds for your patients, i.e. subscribers, like things you're giving them about staying healthy? When they're not thinking about you, are you messaging them, or is it only when they have a need that they call? Is there some type of regular maintenance schedule depending on their age, that type of thing?
Well, first off, let me just say that I'm only 5 months into this, and I'm trying to build the system, but what works with the model is the real question. Well, what works with the model is doing whatever I can to help people stay healthy so that they don't have big problems, so that they don't constantly get on the phone or have to come into my office, so that I can keep them well. And it's not that I don't want to see them. I mean, I don't mind seeing them. I love sitting around and chatting with people. But the point is, as much as I love my auto mechanic, I don't want to see him very often. He may be a nice guy, but I just don't want to see him that often. And I want to provide people opportunities to not have to come in. So what would work with a business model would be to make sure that we are up to date on all the preventive care, risk factor modification, whether it's having a dietitian work with somebody for their diet, having an exercise physiologist work for their exercise side of things. You know, I've thought about getting a pharmacist on staff to look over people's medications. The only way that you get your chart looked at an ordinary doctor's office is if you're sick enough to come in. Then we'll review and say, ooh, you haven't had a colonoscopy or you haven't had a blah, blah, blah in X amount of time. I want to not miss any of those things on my patients, even when they're not coming into my office. Because again, what I've done is I've liberated healthcare from the office visit. It's no longer a commodity that is wrapped around in a small unit. It's an ongoing thing. And so the little problems that you have, we can handle. But also, the things that you're due for, I can reach out to you when you haven't even had a problem, when we're maybe overdue for a service, or even just checking back to see how you're doing, calling you up and saying, hey, how's it going? And those are the types of things that I've been doing and that I'm working into my overall grand plan. People will, you know, let's say somebody starts their cholesterol medicine and then they start thinking, well, gosh, should I be taking this? And they go on the internet and they look up, should I take my cholesterol medicine? And they go to, you know, LipitorIsEvil.com and read one thing, you know, that their liver's going to fall out of their abdomen and that the drug lords are earning tons of money off those medicines. And then they go to the Pfizer website and read about how, you know, it can cure leprosy and it can, you know, cause rainbows to flare out of your ears because it's such a wonderful drug. And so who do they believe? Well, they don't believe either of those. Most people have common sense, but they don't know. And what they need is they need somebody who they can trust. And the person they trust is me because I know them. And I can talk to them and I can listen to their questions. And that's been a huge part of what I've been doing is just being available for those types of questions. And, you know, my initial worry was that this would cause people to become more dependent on me as a doctor, that they would always be asking me these little questions. But I think it's creating a much more independent and self-confident group of patients who feel empowered to take care of themselves because they're not worried that they're doing it wrong. And if they are doing it wrong, they feel like they can call me up or send me a message or whatever. Now, I do have to retrain them because they're always apologizing for calling me up. And I say, you know, they say, oh, I'm sorry to bug you. I say, wait a minute. Look, when you go to the grocery store, do you apologize for taking their food? No. Why not? Because you paid for it. And you have paid for my services, and so this is what you're paying for. It's okay. You're not bugging me. This is why I'm doing it, so that I can help you. It does take a lot of retraining, but for those who use it, it's really liberating for them to feel like they can have their questions answered by the person who's trying to help them stay healthy and has their best interest in mind. So it's been really fun that way.
One thing that worries me is if more doctors follow your lead and get wise and say, you know, I'm fed up with the system and the rules that are really constraining me from innovating or practicing the way that I think is best. I guess my question to you is, what's going to happen? I mean, where are we going to go? Is if enough people leave the system, will that actually change the system, or do we have to, and I think you've written about this, change from within versus change from without.
Yeah. The reason people actually ask me, did Obamacare or Affordable Care Act, depending on which political side you're on, did that influence me? And the answer is, well, yeah, in a way it did. It influenced me to go into this because I don't believe that as big of an impact as that law is purported to have. I'd give it a 4 on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of its impact, and that might be generous because there is such deep change that needs to happen. The amount of change that really is affected by that legislature is pretty minor compared to what needs to happen for healthcare to become healthy. Healthcare is a mess. And I became convinced after as much political blood was shed over the Affordable Care Act that there was no chance whatsoever that there would be politicians with the kahunas to go out there and commit suicide politically and actually reform healthcare. It can't come from the government. I don't believe it can. I believe that the answer to our healthcare problem has to come from the outside. You know, to answer your question of what will happen, well, it depends. One of the reasons that I resisted the idea of doing the higher cost concierge practice, I mean, first was that I just didn't want to be, you know, doctor boy for the rich people, you know, that they could snap their fingers and I would answer and give them whatever they needed. I don't want to do it that way. I want to take care of my elderly patients. I want to take care of the poor and do folks. And it's been a delight to take care of folks without insurance and give them better care than the folks with insurance. That's been really cool. And I really do have a strong desire to take care of the needy people. But, you know, the fact is that I didn't go into the other because also it felt like I was running out of the system and just hitting the escape button. And I actually believe that if paired with the right computer infrastructure, this type of practice could grow maybe up to 2,000 patients if, let's say, I had a dietitian on staff and an exercise person on staff and a couple of nurse practitioner working with me or a physical therapist or a pharmacist or even a counselor to work with this to meet the needs. And all of this would be at no additional cost to my patients because it would allow me to grow my practice more and actually give more global services to my patients. And then we could start caring for populations rather than pathology, rather than diseases. We could say, let's do what's best psychologically for the psychological welfare of the entire population versus what's best for the person who's, you know, going crazy enough that they finally decide that they need to see the psychiatrist. Let's go about fixing things before they break. And my belief is that I can offer better care, and it can be better for the patient, and it can be better for me, and that I can actually save money. And I can probably actually make more money doing that than doing the old kind of hamster wheel medicine that I was doing for 18 years. It could actually be very attractive for other doctors to go to, and I think you would find a lot more doctors interested in going into primary care. And I think you might even find some specialists who would see it maybe as more profitable to be in primary care. Wouldn't that be ironic that they would see that, you know, this is actually better care, and it's I can do preventive cardiology for my, the number one killer in America, or we could go, whatever. I mean, there's tons of possibilities. But I really think that this has the potential of just totally turning the tables on healthcare and making healthcare truly about keeping people well and keeping people healthy. And that's kind of mind-blowing of what could happen if it went to the general public. But I think people need to have a proof of concept that it can work on a bigger scale and it can actually be better care. I'm up to 300 patients and it's just me and a nurse, and we're doing okay. I think this could totally be a game changer if done right, and which is why I've been careful not to grow too fast, because this is about the long term. It's not just about the short term. My goal is to set the stage and have people stop saying that there's no other alternative. There is, and my patients are delighted by the care they're getting right now because I answer the phone, because I answer their emails.
Dr. Rob Lamberts is a primary care physician in direct practice in Evansville, Georgia, and he's an avid blogger, and you can read his blog at more-distractable.org. Dr. Rob Lamberts is a direct practice primary care physician in Augusta, Georgia, and an avid blogger. You can read his blog at more-distractable.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa on Health for today. Our show is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.